Hello, it is May 2nd, 2016, and this is the October 2015 LCT cohort, section number 3. I am Jill Farmer, and tonight our subject matter is setting up shop. So I'm really looking forward to being with you guys this evening. The intention of this class is to have a rich discussion with hopefully a lot of questions and answers around putting together the bones of your life coaching practice. If you think about, kind of the whole body of work that you're creating and learning about in coach training, we call this kind of the bones of the practice. This is of the structure that gives some foundation to a lot of the other things that we're putting together here. Whether or not, and as you've heard in various recordings, you've heard us say this, whether or not you have any intention of having a standalone coaching practice at all, whether you're considering doing this as a side hustle that in addition to whatever else you do for work and play in your life, or whether it's just kind of a way of life that you incorporate into it, there's information I think that can be useful for just about everybody. So, for instance, I have a friend who went through the training who doesn't have a traditional coaching practice, but she throws a couple of retreats a year through her church because she's learned that she sort of loves that work and loves to do that, and so she found some of the information helpful about having liability insurance to help her be able to make that happen without carrying any undue liability or risk. So that's kind of the very, very basics. And I will tell you, traditionally, this class, including way back when I went through coach training, is one that often triggers stuff for people. It wasn't intentionally designed to do that, but we've decided that it's actually a positive fringe benefit from the class. Because a lot of times when we start talking about, some square three things about potentially giving some shape to what coaching in the world might look like for you, that can tend to trigger some old stories. So some limiting beliefs that tend to show up consistently in this class through the years as we've taught it are things like, I am behind, I should have a clear idea of what I'm doing by now, I'm overwhelmed, I don't have time to do everything I'm going to need to do to set up a coaching practice. Other people get this or are ahead of me. I mean, there's just a whole lot of ways that we can beat ourselves up if we're not careful when it comes to the actual setting up shop or beginning to maybe move a little bit out of that dreaming and scheming space and into square three when it comes to setting up shop. So that's, if that is happening to you, no problem. I mean, that it's very typical, it's very normal. Just use it as an opportunity, gift yourself with the ability to just write down those thoughts, buddy up with your partner or some other buddies, and work those thoughts as they come up. And notice what your body is telling you. Where do you feel your anxiety? Use your coaching tools on whatever comes up in this process as you begin to play with putting your coaching out there, potentially giving some shape to what your coaching practice may look like. And the other thing to notice is that how you've done other things in your life, if you have a default pattern, whether it's your Colby cognitive style, if you're a quick start or a fact finder or high quick start and high fact finder, the way that you do things in the rest of your life, you are likely to default to do them here as well. And if that works beautifully for you, great. If you tend to be somebody who procrastinates in the rest of your life, this is another space that you have a laboratory to potentially learn some ways that you can not let your fear or limiting beliefs shut you down and allow you to maybe try some things to move through procrastination. If you're somebody who tends to get, when you get a little panicky and nervous, fight or flight kicks in about something that you just kind of get busy for the sake of being busy, call hamster on the wheel, frenetic motion mode, then this is going to perhaps be an opportunity for you to give yourself a laboratory to say, what does it feel like when I slow down a little bit and when I give a little space and a little peace to this process, even though that hasn't been my natural way of doing it? Because, of course, when we get a little uncertain about anything, fight or flight, we tend to run, you know, pell-mell, sometimes fast speed on the hamster wheel, or hide out, or freeze, which is kind of where the procrastination part of it takes a root. So wherever you are in the process, as you're listening, just notice as you're asking questions or listening to other answers being made, notice what's happening in your body and notice what thoughts potentially are attached to it. And if you can't come up with that, then ask your buddies to kind of talk it through with you and help you maybe drill down to some of the beliefs that are coming up if there is discomfort around kind of thinking about this, or maybe just a part of it, like the pricing, or, you know, maybe there's a component of it, the technical side that tends to bring up your stuff. Use this as an opportunity to poke around a little bit and to gift yourself with the ability to move through it and not get stuck in it. So that's kind of all I wanted to say in terms of overview. I muted some of you just because there was some noise on the line, so I would love it if you would unmute yourself and now. And I would love to hear questions, comments, or anything that made you curious or anything that gave you kind of a, to use the Oprah term, an aha moment as you were either listening to the recordings or looking through some of the materials that we gave for you in relation to setting up shop. So what do you got for me?
Hi, this is Russ.
Hey, Russ, how you doing?
Hi, how are you? Yeah, for a while I was arguing or struggling with the fact that I wanted to do a standalone practice, and I just stopped fighting and decided I'm going to go ahead and integrate, as we talked about on the recordings, integrate this into my fitness practice with the hope of later on something, you know, maybe growing out of that separately. But for right now, it seems to me everybody I run into, their biggest problem seems to be trying to stay in shape. I mean, even at our seminar, somebody, I tried to tool on a total stranger, and I asked him what is his area of least satisfaction, and of course he said my fitness. So I said, okay, I'm not going to fight this anymore. I'm going to go ahead and just integrate.
Excellent. I love that. So what questions do you have about kind of making that happen or setting up or any of the resources that were there or comments?
Well,
on that you found
I can
helpful?
See where I can see where everybody can seem pretty overwhelmed. I decided that that I guess the simplest way to start is the way I've always been. I'm still one of the people who still uses a day runner to keep my appointments. I basically use the phone and the iPad for making appointments or reminding me stuff and collecting email. But I don't think I'm going to start building a website or doing anything like that just yet.
Okay, and so when are you already training people right now one-on-one?
As a personal trainer?
Yeah.
Yes, I am.
Okay.
The coaching seems to kind of fall in there, you know, kind of as a sideline. It never is somebody just wanting to sit down and talk to me, although I do invite people to do that.
Right.
Side thing is,
do you have, I was going to say, do you have any type of a newsletter or any type of a regular communication mechanism you have for kind of letting people know what you're up to and what you're doing or sharing?
No, but that was the aha moment. I worked in television news for almost 11 years, and I can't believe I haven't used more of my writing skills to actually get the word out. And I think the newsletter, a simple email newsletter, is probably the way I'll expose myself even more to my clients.
Yeah, and that's where I think that's a really great opportunity for some cross-pollination, so to speak, as well.
So I like that.
People that know you as, you know, the trainer in that area of expertise, but if you can write about, you know, some things that you see as universals among all clients about, you know, reasons that people put themselves last or have trouble prioritizing fitness or beat themselves up or whatever universal themes are that you see get in their way. You can blog about it. You could offer, you know, free telecalls so that people could tune in and kind of have a chat, just like we are having on the phone tonight with a group of people where you lead and teach some ideas to a group. So there's all kinds of ways that that you could, you know, build community. I have a friend who's in the fitness business and a trainer and fitness instructor, and she does retreats now, and she's also a coach. And she was having a hard time converting her one-on-one fitness clients to one-on-one coaching clients, but she does retreats now in Mexico a couple times a year, and they've been huge successes and sellouts. And she has found that she has clients that are more loyal than they've ever been, people that used to be maybe, she had a lot of clients that would turn over at 6 months to a year. And because of the community she's built around her newsletter and her Facebook page that she has with that business, people look to her as a kind of a thought leader, both when it comes to coaching and fitness and dance. And she's just really had fun kind of building it from there. So I think you're onto something that could be really great.
Did your friend stay with the, or did your friend fall into that same like 2 to 3 year startup mode that I seem to be hearing about?
Yeah, that's about where she is right now. She's about 3 years or 2 years out from kind of expanding from just kind of having private one-on-one clients and teaching a few fitness classes at various places to having her own kind of
right.
brand and business.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it's been really cool to see how, and just new ideas, and her clients have helped her come up with ideas and events and things that are beyond either category of fitness group fitness classes. You know, she teaches what does she call it? It's it's a date night, salsa date night, where she has couples who are, some of them are her clients and spouses or partners, or they bring friends, and she teaches salsa lessons and kind of then makes it really fun and talks about how, does some metaphors around how learning to dance when you're uncomfortable is really a metaphor for stretching yourself in other parts of your life. And they've started out with just 2 or 3 people coming who are kind of her diehard fans, and now they sell out almost the second that she puts them up. So it's been fun to see it grow.
Yeah. Now, my last question was probably about platforms. I'm looking at the simplest platforms. A good friend of mine said, why don't you just let your inner genius just run with it? Do you find anybody is using Facebook extensively or LinkedIn extensively?
Yeah, both of those. It really depends on who your audience is, what tool is most comfortable in your hands, where your people are hanging out, finding your ideal client class. I know I'm sure your instructor talked about kind of hanging out at the drinking fountain or the water fountain metaphorically where they are. And so I think that's something to consider when it comes to that stuff as well. And in a couple of weeks when we have you're getting your practice out in the world, we'll talk even a little bit more about some of the marketing vehicles and techniques. But there, you know, in terms of platforms, some people, you know, a lot of businesses, I mean, if you look at, like, the food truck industry, a lot of them really have either very basic websites or they just have people come to their business Facebook page, and that's how they tell people what's going on, you know, where things are going, and they pay for, you know, Facebook ads or to get posting sponsored so that they show up higher on people's feeds. But that's a very basic and simple way if building a website feels onerous. And now WordPress is making it really simple. There are a number of coaches who have some website experience that can, I think, for very, very reasonable and low prices, can kind of help you set up a very basic website that lets people know how they can reach you or allows them to kind of know what you have available. So it's a lot easier than it was even 3 or 4 years ago to play with a variety of different platforms.
Great. Well, thank you. That works for me.
Thank you. Great questions and good things for us to think about. Who's next? Who else has a question or something to share?
Hi, Jill. This is Alan.
Hi, Alan.
So I think, like, when I listen to all the resources and stuff, I get pretty jazzed. Like, oh, cool. There's so much you can do. And I just got a lot of ideas. But where I'm getting tripped up with is I still, like, I don't know. I don't specifically know who I'm trying to, like, my ideal client. I don't have a really specific sense of who that is. I know I like the really deep square one, pulling people out of that stuff. And, like, so far the only thing I've been able to come up with that feels good to me is I help people who feel disconnected from who they are reconnect with who they want to be. But I don't know who that is.
Yeah. So are you coaching your face off?
I am not coaching my face off. And this is sort of the story I keep telling myself. It's like, well, I want to coach my face off, but I'm having trouble, you know, I'm having trouble, like, getting people to, no matter what I've tried, I have, like, a handful of clients. Uh-huh. And it's just been a slow process of trying to get more than that. I keep telling myself, well, if I had a better sense of who to, if I could narrow it down some more, I'd get more clients. And I always get stuck in this sort of, like, catch-22 thing of I need to be more specific to get more clients, but I need more clients to understand who I want to serve.
So I have a couple of ideas for you. Number one is ask in your cohort if somebody who thinks they might want to do a little bit of square two or a square three coaching would coach you around doing some just kind of like just running through some of the dreaming and scheming tools and doing a little mapping of some ways to play with doing that. And then secondly, I would ask anybody in your cohort if they would be willing to be coached by you so that you could, continue to get that practice in even among some different people within your cohort. We tend to have a pretty high, I know it skews more female than male, but we have a pretty big age range, location range, vocation range. And so you have a chance to kind of explore what kind of seems to be showing up more often than not. Because I think your XYZ or XYZ statement is really good, and it feels a little broad. Like I'm thinking, is that me or not? And so that's just and you're not supposed to, know. The other thing to do is to kind of make one up that you think in your littlest imagination, maybe you might kind of want to. You could say, right now, do you have a day job or a career that you work in currently?
That's my other thing. I've come up to this realization that, the people that I am surrounded with, I don't think they have the money that I want. Does that make sense? I don't think they're the people that are going to be able to sustain the standalone practice I want to create.
Okay. So a couple of things. Then you can play with how can I maybe put together some group things. So if I put together, if somebody could pay a quarter, if I am eventually going to want to charge, X number of dollars per hour, can I charge? So say I want to charge $100 an hour for one-on-one coaching. I'm just throwing out there. You may want to charge $300. I don't know. I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
That's for you to decide. But then you might want to say, oh, the people that I know I can speak to and I'm actually super comfortable with, I might, for now, coach them for $25 an hour to get the practice of experiencing that. Or I might putting together some group things where somebody might not pay $100 an hour. They might pay $25 an hour to experience, and then I get to decide if I really do want to do more one-on-one or if this group kind of thing is more interesting to me.
Okay.
So is any of that helpful to you as you kind of think about giving some
shape? Yeah, for sure. I especially like the sort of make up XYZ that feels even a little bit that sort of sparks even a little bit of something. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, I mean, I coached doctors kind of by default for a while, and I really had no intention of being a coach for doctors. And I seem to always have one or two physicians now in my practice still, but they were there, and so I kind of was like, hey, I coach doctors, and I reached out to other medical professionals and talked about how I help doctors with time and overwhelm issues. Subsequently, it ended up giving me really great information and anecdotes from a group of people that people tend to be really interested in when I was writing my book, because people, our culture tends to give a lot of gravitas to physicians and kind of their experiences. And so when I was basically ensconced in physician coaching during that stage, it ended up working out really well, even though at times I was like, I don't think I just want to coach doctors, and yet here they all are. But that was a place for me to start, and they were kind of a tough audience. It helped me. It was a great place to sharpen my skills, that's for sure.
Cool.
Yeah, thank you. Good questions. And
thank you. Yeah.
Thanks for letting me play with you a little bit. Okay, who else has a question?
I just want to throw out there, this is Donna Peterson. Al and I'm having some of the same problems and same issues and challenges, so if we want to coach each other, maybe it will help.
Sure. Let's talk after,
And who did you say that was?
Donna Peterson.
Donna Peterson. Thanks, Donna. I just wanted to make sure that I'll cop that. Great. Yay. Okay, who else? Anybody have any questions about intake forms, insurance, website stuff, scheduling?
Hey, Jill, it's Amy. I had a question for you, and I think someone from the other section actually posted this in the forum. The difference, is there a difference between pre-work and the client intake form, or are they pretty much the same thing?
Great question. I'm glad, I'm glad she posted that, and I'm especially glad that you asked about it. So they can be together. I personally now, the intake form that you guys have there is not the very latest one, because I tend to kind of change them around a little every so often, just noticing kind of what's happening with my individual clients and where what I think gives me more information, whether for a long time, all my clients I sort of knew, and so I didn't need quite as much details coming into coaching. And then I started having people who I lived in totally different parts of the country that I had no former association with, and so I wanted a little bit more detail. So how I do it now is I have a coaching intake form that's kind of what I just described as the nuts and bolts. So that's, you know, name, date of birth, telephone number, mailing address, email address, preferred telephone number. I think in the intake form you guys have, I had my clients call me. I now have changed that. I call my clients for a variety of reasons, mainly just because I had been, when I was trained, the coach who had a very strong belief and feeling that clients need to take responsibility, and that kind of anchors them into the process, and so that you just gave them your telephone number and then they called you at the appointed time. And then I kept having things happen, like I live in a place where I don't have great cell phone service at home, and then it would rain and ants would get in the box and my landline would be dead and I wouldn't know. So I would think that my client's trying to call me at our appointed time and the call's not coming through, and I'm thinking they're missing our call and they're not. Or I'd be traveling and it just took a lot of email communication to make sure that they had the right number, and, you know, if I was traveling overseas, how'd you deal with the whole Skype thing. So I just now ask them to provide me a telephone number, and I find it simpler and fewer missed appointments, and it seems to be working really well. In terms of I also have them do some pre-work. A lot of my clients come to me with time and overwhelm issues. That's one of the facets or branches of my coaching practice, where I see a lot of people, or I do a lot of speaking around the country to groups and companies and organizations around time and overwhelm stuff. So that's the portal that people come to me through, initially anyway. And so I don't have a super long pre-work, because people who are overwhelmed and stressed out, that tends to be a lot for them. So I try to keep it pretty simple so that I have a clear understanding of what their expectations are about coaching. They could, you know, wave a magic wand. What would they like to see happen? It also tells me if I have somebody that can't even spend 3 to 5 minutes to give me kind of a basic outline of what's going on with them, chances are slim that they're actually going to be able to make the commitment to themselves to show up for coaching and to be willing to potentially try things a little bit differently. So that is that's kind of the reason that I break those two things out separately, and it seems to work well for me. But there's no right or wrong way. You get to kind of feel your way into that. Does that answer your question?
And it definitely does. Thank you. And I'm a high follow through. I follow through and fact finders close behind. So I'm very process oriented.
Ah.
And I'm trying to no.
Oh, teachers are often high follow through fact finders.
No, I'm not, but I'm trying to kind of think of the process of how this will flow. And I mean, I've had a life coach in the past, and that's why I'm here, and I can't remember, you know, the process that she used when I worked with her. But I'm kind of, someone finds you, have that initial consult, they agree to, you know, whatever package, you know, they want, and then they go ahead and they pay, and at that point, is that ideally when you want to send that intake form, or is it even before? For the initial consult. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that's a great flow. Is generally I send them the PayPal link or a PayPal invoice because I find that to be the simplest to use. And I also give them the option to send me a check and just let them know that slows the process down just a bit. But then yeah. I don't have to pay the fees. And for some people, if they never use PayPal, it can feel really onerous. And so if they really want to get going and they just want to pop a check in the mail to me, I take both.
Okay.
And so I usually have them do that. If I know them already, then I might send the intake forms in and say, you know, as soon as payment is cleared and I get your intake forms, we'll go. If I don't, I usually wait for payment because I unfortunately have had just one person in all the years, but that was all gung-ho and went through the process and got all the sessions scheduled and then payment just never came through. So you kind of play that a little bit by ear. I think that was an anomaly. And somebody who just kind of wasn't being 100% in integrity with themselves or with me about what they were willing and able to do at that time. So again, you kind of feel your way in, but generally speaking, the process, I have a step by, you know, I just cut and paste an email and it says basically, here's the steps. I did talk about, and somebody else posted on the other class forum about what do you do in a 30-minute free call or a get-to-know-you session. Generally speaking, if I don't know somebody at all or I know somebody but I'm not sure whether we're going to be a good fit, I just say let's schedule a, you know, 15 to 30-minute call, usually seems to last around 20 minutes, where I can hear more about what you need, you can find out kind of how the coaching process works, and we could just make sure it feels like a good fit for each other. And, you know, usually it is, but every once in a while I'll have kind of my body compass will tell me that somebody is just not ready for coaching. If somebody's really, really, really stuck in the story that their situation is unique and nothing they do is going to really change anything, that doesn't tend to be a great fit for me, you know, I might not be a good fit for somebody who wants a very highly structured accountability style program where on this session one we do XYZ and they have a syllabus, and session two we do XYZ and there's a syllabus, which is the way some coaches from some training programs or backgrounds or their style of doing it works, and so they decide that that doesn't feel structured or enough for them, then that they decide I'm not a good fit. So, I'll send them the email. Once I have decided that we've decided we're a good fit with each other, if we've done that kind of intake call of some form, then I just have an email. Here's the steps. Here's how you pay. Here's the link to my Google. I use both of the intake forms now as Google forms because they're just so darn easy. And then here's the link to my scheduler. and schedule your four sessions. I do ask people to schedule all. I sell pack. I don't. I'm not currently actually. My coaching practice is full just because I have a big corporate client that is now is having me coach one on one a bunch of their middle management people, and I'm doing a program, a 6-month program, a fresh start program that includes monthly one on one coaching for everybody. So I don't have space right now for outside clients, but if I did, that's then I would, you know, have them go to my scheduler, schedule all four of the sessions and the packages, because that's how I sell them, and go from there. That's a very
got it. That's
a question.
No, that's so helpful. Thank you. Can I ask another question really quickly?
You sure can.
So insurance. This is interesting, and I was listening to the recordings, over the weekend. I don't know if anybody else has experienced this or if you have in the past, trying to get the brokers to understand what it is we do to kind of find the right policy. And I know Philadelphia has one specifically for life coaches, so I've kind of thought about exploring that way too. But have you experienced like some of these brokers that I'm talking to, like they just have no clue?
Yeah, I mean, my broker wasn't familiar, but he just went out and asked and shopped around, and I think mine is through Hiscox, HISCOX, I believe, and it's a perfect. It's there's a liability and a kind of general practice policy that is designed specifically for people who are in the, as they describe it, advice giving. Even though we don't think of ourselves as giving advice, but it's designed for people so that you can't get sued for leading somebody astray,
right?
in terms of advice, and it has different names. We used to, I think we named some of them on the recording, and then people got all hung up because they were trying to find that particular name that particular insurance company used to use, and now they kind of rename them. It's not like auto liability; it's not quite that clear cut, but
yeah.
It's out there for sure. I mean, I know lots and lots of us have it, so I just. Keep asking.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Great, great question. Who else has a...
Hi, I have a question.
Hi.
This is Sai. Hi, Jill.
Hi.
So I have the same question about the free chat with the potential client.
Yeah.
And I would love for you to talk more about that because I think there's a lack of confidence to actually get someone to sign up because I'm like, how are they going to sign up if they don't experience my coaching and, like, what am I going to say? You talk about really seeing if you are a good fit for each other, and I know that's what's important, but I feel like, okay, how do I, I'm kind of, I don't know what to say in that free chat really to explain the process of my coaching, and so I would love to, hear what you say and just to give me an idea of, yeah.
Well, and different coaches have really different styles. I have coach friends that do that don't do a free 30-minute intake. They'll do a half price or greatly significantly in decreased price discovery session, so that they're really doing like a half hour coaching session that's really similar to the way that a regular coaching session goes. And that was really good for me when I first started coaching, because it was a chance for me to build some muscle, to kind of have the experience. And I discovered I was pretty messy and not very good at the dismount, so to speak, at the 30 end of those, because I was like, I was kind of trying to sell, but then not really, and my energy was there.
Yes.
And so that was really helpful for me to do that. And I did, a lot of those. And so, that's one method to do it. For me now, usually it's somebody's reached out via email and I've, asked them a question or two in email. So I make sure, if somebody is specifically looking for very targeted career coaching where they want interview skills stuff, I can, I send those off, or I have a lot of other people to refer them to who I think might be a better fit. And I refer probably over half of the requests that I get in for coaching because it just doesn't feel like a good fit, and that has been a very, that has not deflected business from my practice. It's brought, I think, a lot in because I have a lot of other people refer business back to. If I'm just not sure, I used to, if I wasn't sure, I would just refer everything out. And now I've decided that's where I kind of play in the discovery session. I get curious. And that's really all you have to do in your session is to ask questions about what the mistake that I think I made initially, and I would say it's pretty common for a lot of new coaches, is their energy is that without realizing it is I've got to prove myself to this client instead of I want to be curious about what this client really needs, and I want to ask questions, and I want to allow them to ask questions of me, and I'm going to try to come back to that place of stillness and my essential self so that I can really answer it versus treat it like I'm a nervous recent college graduate trying to impress them. Stop it. That's not great energy for me. That's not usually where I shine, personally. Maybe everyone else does. But
right. Yeah. I think that's definitely the energy that I have, that I have going into a free chat. I mean, that I feel right now. It's like, I have to prove myself. So that's good to know, to remember curiosity.
Yeah. I mean, different coaching programs will teach on how to convert from the discovery session to, multi-$1,000 coaching, or how to make sure that every time you get on the phone call, you have what's your conversion rate? That stuff does not resonate with me. It doesn't line up with my integrity, and it does with other people's. And I'm not here to tell you what's right or wrong if you want to, think of it in terms of conversion rates. For me, it's drilling down to my essential self, getting curious about what they might need and considering whether I might be able to be of some help and support to them.
Right.
And it's the same energy I try to take in when a corporation is reaching out to me about coming in and potentially doing a program. I mean, I try not to minimize and be like, well, I don't know if I can do it I think I'm great at this and I would love to be able to play with you guys if what they're saying they need in their group feels like it's fun for me. And it's taken time for me to be pretty unattached about that. You know, Martha used to say, be unattached. I was like, I can be unattached. I need that money. My ego needs to know this is not just an expensive hobby and somebody will hire me to do it. And there was definitely a lot of square one work to be done in that arena for me. And it's paid off beautifully. The cleaner I am with just really letting my essential self be honest. And I also did the other thing where I could tell somebody wasn't really a good fit, but they seemed to be willing to hire me. So I was like, well, they want to hire me, so I better do it. And, sometimes it turned out to be fine. My initial hesitation it wasn't really coming from my intuition. It was coming from my head. Other times, intuitively, I really knew, and I tried to talk myself into it, and it was somewhat of a, I'll say train wreck. I mean, nothing's ever been that tragic, but it's kind of not the best experience, shall we say. It was illuminating more to show me what wasn't a good fit than it was what was a good fit, and that's okay, too. And you got to go into it knowing that that is going to happen. That happens to 100% of coaches, that you say yes at some point along the line to either an individual client or an experience that ends up not being your North Star, and that's okay. Just use it as data.
Great. Thank you. That's super helpful.
Okay, good. Thanks for your question, Sai. I like that one.
Thanks.
Who else?
Hey, Jill, this is Ray, and I have a question for you.
Hi, Ray. Good to hear from you.
Yeah. Thanks for tonight. This has been really helpful. One thing that has served me well is having the opportunity to have either a boss or a coworker, observe what I'm doing and how I'm doing, and the opportunity for feedback from different people about what I'm doing and kind of what they see in a different perspective. Is there opportunity that, is there a way to create opportunities for kind of colleague interaction, if you will, just for feedback from people who know what they're doing and who can give you constructive feedback about how to be better?
Yeah, great question. And so, of course, that's what Coach the Coach is all about. So you're in your remaining, you know, several months here, volunteer and coach as much as you can in that opportunity, because that's exactly what's happening, is you're getting a trained observer to give you meaningful feedback. And some of the coaches in the coach training program, who do a lot of the Coach the Coach work, particularly coming to mind is Jackie Gartman, and I believe Terry DeMeo does this too, offer a service where you can hire them to essentially, if you have clients that are willing to let your sessions be recorded, you can send them recordings and they'll listen and give you feedback about what they thought worked.
Oh, that's cool.
And, of course, you can also ask Coach Buddies to do that for you, if you, you know, as long as you have the client's permission to record for educational purposes and have somebody else listen in and give feedback as well.
Do you ever feel the need to do that, or are you, like, pretty solid in how you, like, your approach all the time?
You know, I don't anymore. I did when I was learning, and then I went into master – a couple of years after I had been coaching, I went into master coach training, and we did a lot of it in master coach training. And so that was helpful. That was a helpful part of the learning process for me, to get that feedback and to have somebody else's just ideas about how, when I was kind of maybe stuck or spinning, that they maybe would have played with it. It's so intuitive. It's almost like a meditative dance I do with my clients. We kind of go in together and and I'm just learning with practice to trust my intuitive muscle. And I've just practiced using a lot of the tools, and I tend to pick up them. You know, the ones – I do a lot of square three coaching. I don't do a ton of square one coaching. So those tools are extremely familiar to me, and I use them a lot, as well as adaptations of my own tools I have evolved out of, you know, having a chance to work with people. Does that answer your question?
Right. Yeah. No, it does. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for asking. I think it's a good one, and I think it's – you know, I think it's a great way. I think I would challenge myself, if I were you, to do some coaching, you know, without getting the feedback to be sure that you know, that you're without the 360 survey to know what everybody else's perceptions are. And, and then to also do some of that as well. I think that both of those will be helpful for you. The other thing to do is to ask if it's, you know, especially if you're doing free or discounted coaching, to ask your clients to do a to follow up with a survey or to answer a few questions about the experience once the coaching is all done.
Oh, okay. That sounds terrifying, but like a very good idea. Yeah. Cool. Thank you very much.
You're welcome very much. Thank you for asking your question. It was great. Who else? Oh my gosh, time is flying. So fun. Anybody have any questions or freakouts around the pricing stuff, or how to figure out or how that? Anything in there that feels sticky or tricky for you? Anybody?
Yeah.
Okay. Who's that?
It's Amy again. I'm learning to use my body compass with it and go with what feels right. So what I decided to do was take, you know, coach my face off very seriously. So I was able to wrangle up several clients and coach for free. And they all committed to 6 sessions each. So I'm definitely getting a lot of practice in there.
Cool.
What's happening now is some of them are winding down. They're getting to their last session. I started doing this at the end of February. So a lot of them are starting to finish up now. And it's the, okay, now what? you know, asking them if they, you know, or kind of opening up for them if they would like to continue with more at a rate or a package. But then also, am I, you know, okay, am I ready now to actually put this out there as a, using finger quotes, real coach who's going to have package pricing, you know, available to anybody? And what are those, you know, what are those numbers? You know, what makes sense for this? Because I kind of feel like, and I don't know if anybody else feels like this, but I kind of feel like, okay, I'm not certified yet. I'm still in training. Can I, and this might be a sticky, you know, belief for me, but can I charge now? I mean, is that appropriate? So those are kind of some of the areas that I'm stuck when it comes to charging.
Yeah, and so when, as you're winding down with your six clients, with a couple of clients that have had the six sessions, at the end of it, do you see yourself feeling like there's more that we could do here? I think we've opened up some ideas and there's more to do here, or, gosh, I think a lot's happened, and I don't know what we can add from here.
They're all different. I just had two that ended last week, and one is very much, there's a lot more that could be done there. The other one, not so much. I'm kind of like,
you're getting really clear. So you're notice what your fear mind is saying. I need a rule to figure this out so I know. Your experience is informing you beautifully about, on a case-by-case basis, who might benefit from some additional coaching and that it might be valuable to them. Tell me where I'm wrong.
No, you're right. And, yeah, in side note with this coaching is also, because I have nine clients. I have nine people that I'm coaching, no charge, six sessions each. And what that has done is helped me kind of hone in even a little bit more on my ideal client, recognizing who I truly like, which situations I get really jazzed by, you know what I mean, that I'm really kind of excited to coach through, and ones that maybe don't feel like a great fit. So that's helpful as well in this experience. But, yeah, what you just said, and knowing, trusting, I guess that's trusting my intuition to know whether they could benefit from more or not, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like,
I wasn't trying to, yeah. I was not making fun, but I also knew that you already knew the answer to that question when you asked me.
Yes. Thank you.
That's how. What you said.
Yeah. Perfect.
Cool. Thank you for that, Amy. Who else? A couple other things that I haven't come up as questions yet that I like to cover. In terms of the formula that Gretchen and Nona worked through in the number of clients, just as a side note, I learned that formula and had it all worked out and thought, based on the kind of practice I was going to have, I would want about, I don't know, I thought I didn't want to coach more than 20 hours a week. Just in actual practice for me, 5 to 7 clients is ideal. 10 is an absolute max for me in a week. I have this tipping point where it stops being energizing and meaningful and starts to feel draining, and I don't coach at my best, and the experience is no longer, it starts to feel like a J-O-B and not, excuse me, something more meaningful. I have other friends, oh my gosh, my friend Corinne coaches 25 to 30 clients a week. And loves it, you know, just will be like, oh, darn, I only had 4 clients today. I'm done. And so that is a very highly individualized process. And so if you do your math using that formula, which I think can be a good starting point, the math of the formula should never override your body compass or your intuition for what is ideal for you. and what, you know, creating your ideal life looks like. And if you force yourself to be untrue to that, and of course there's a, if you're somebody that hides out, never wants to try anything new or do anything that's the slightest bit uncomfortable for you, then you're going to want to stretch maybe and play with some of those three B's. But I see more often, I see the opposite, where people are thinking, okay, well, I've got to have this many clients and it's got to look exactly like this, and they sort of force themselves into a mold or a formula that really doesn't serve and doesn't work with their life and the life that they want to live. So, any questions or comments about that? Because I wanted to kind of bring that up. Any questions about office equipment or technology? We touched on it a little bit with Russ and Alan, but about Russ right off the bat about kind of the idea of platforms. But anybody have any questions specifically about like anything that's confusing, or do you want my opinion on which email service is better than others? I'm happy to answer any more specific or technical questions if anybody has those as well.
I have another question. This is Guy. So it's not related to what you said. But I was wondering if, about the frequency of the coaching calls and in the recordings. I think the coach has said twice a month, every other week. And what do you think about once a week, every week? Is that too much in your opinion, or is it better to do it every other week?
It totally depends on the style of coaching. For people who are doing, you know, square one coaching, the people I know who coach every week tend to be doing more square one coaching. And that, so that's a generalization that is not a universal truth for all. But that if you like square one coaching and somebody's in this place where those limiting beliefs, you know, how they can be kind of sticky and how we'll tend to slide back into them. The rut, the neural pathways are very entrenched. And so sometimes having a weekly check-in to say, yeah, I'm noticing some of the old patterns. I'm, you know, the turnarounds are feeling true. That can be helpful as opposed to, oh, I'm back to, but I'm back in this situation and this has triggered that old story again. I offer people frequency of either every 2 weeks or once a month. Weekly coaching for my clients tends to feel a little fire hosey. They need 2 weeks to kind of try stuff out, see what's working, what's not working. Longer than a month, and people tend to lose momentum, and then they come back with, I was doing so well, and then you know, almost like I'm their teacher or professor, and they, so that's what I find.
Okay, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense, yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for the question. Really good. Who else? We have time for maybe one or two more.
Jill?
Yeah.
Hi, it's Laura. How are you?
Good, Laura. Thanks for jumping on. What can I answer for you?
It's a practical question, actually. In terms of keeping notes and records of conversations and sessions with clients, I totally appreciate that it makes sense to keep a record. And I know that we're all very individual the way that we do this kind of thing. I'm just wondering if you have any recommendation based on your own practice or your exposure to other coaches. Like, do you keep manual notes? Do you tend to keep notes electronically of your conversations with clients?
Yeah, great question. And again, you're all over the board. So my husband, the attorney, would prefer I kept no notes from.
Yeah.
because then there's no way they can ever be subpoenaed or you know any of those things. I track. I kind of have a note. When I first started coaching, it was very meaningful for me to take more detailed notes and then to do a follow up note with my clients where I kind of processed in a lot of detail what I felt, you know, showed up from my perspective. I always encourage them to take notes too, and I so that they had the kind of combination of both of our perspectives. And mm-hmm. I think I learned through that process. I think it helped me to kind of learn on both in the moment when I was coaching, and then helped me to kind of have a second chance to see what worked and what didn't work and those kinds of things. Now there was, you know, it's fairly recently, I guess in the last year or two, those more detailed follow-up notes started to feel a little onerous, and I found myself having this energy of, oh, I'm not looking forward to the session because I'm not, I didn't want to do the notes. And I was like, oh, okay, I think it's time to do those a little differently. And so I don't promise that I do follow-up notes with any of my clients now. And I tend to, if there's just some clear takeaways that I'd like them to hold on to, or resources that I think could be really useful, videos or other tools mm-hmm. or other information or worksheets or whatever, I'll follow up with a more bullet style takeaway process. And mm-hmm. the reason I like doing that too is that I can go back and just look at the emails. I have a folder for every client on my mm-hmm. computer. My desktop is my own. Nobody else in my family has access to it. It's password protected, and it's my coaching computer. So that way I just have a folder where I keep the spreadsheet that keeps track of the payments, that mm-hmm. keeps track of the sessions, so I know how many sessions they've done, and then I just, you know, click and drag the emails once I sent them into that folder. So when it's time for our session the next week, all I have to do a few minutes before is go look at what, you know, the email takeaways that I sent, so that mm-hmm. it jogs my memory about what we talked about last time.
Cool.
That's how I do it. Other coaches have more elaborate processes, and other coaches have zero. It's all up to the client to take notes. It's all up to the client to come to say, remember last time we talked about this, this time I'd like us to go here.
Totally. Okay, interesting.
Just do whichever way you choose to do it with confidence.
Okay. No, cool. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, great question. Thank you for that. Okay, we have time for just one more quick one if somebody's got one that.
Hi, Jill. This is Sarah. Can you hear me? Jill?
I can hear you, Sarah. It's Laura. Can you still hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Is Jill there? I'm not hearing anything.
That's so bizarre. I can't.
I can hear you, too. Jill, I can't hear you. Can you hear her?
Oh, I wonder if Jill got disconnected.
I think she got disconnected, and we're all still on the line.
Well, Sarah, what's your question?
The host has joined the conference.
Oh, there she is.
Hi, friends.
Punch in your conference code, please.
I'm back. It just started raining here. I think there's ants in my telephone box. Damn it. So anyway, I'm sorry that I left the building there for a minute or so. Thank you all for hanging around, everybody who did. I still want to offer to stick with my offer. If there's one more question that I can answer before you head out.
Yeah, this is Sarah.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi, I have a real quick one. I keep reading that for an hour session, then you should put like a half an hour in between before you make your next call. Do you feel that it's really necessary to have that whole half an hour? Seems like a lot.
In my scheduling software, I allow 15 minutes, and I need every bit of those 15 minutes, and a half hour is a little mm-hmm. more ideal. Because just having stuff like get a drink of water, go to the bathroom, check email, do some follow-up. So I think half hour is great. And sometimes if I know a lot of people are trying to get sessions in, you know, last 2 weeks of the month or something in one of my programs where they have to get them in because they don't carry over to the next month, I might allow 15 minutes between to allow a few more in. But I've discovered every once in a while I've had to do back-to-back, and I just need some kind of recentering, reconnecting time before I start another call. And so that's something that I really try to avoid if at all possible.
Okay,
good question. And you can also make the call 55 minutes long or 50 minutes long or, you know, 45 minutes long. They don't have to be an hour either. So you get to choose.
Okay.
You guys were great.
Okay.
Many great questions. And I think we covered a really nice breadth of material, which I love. And the way the scheduling turned out this time, I get to be back with you in 2 weeks to talk about, to teach, actually by my very favorite class to teach in coach training, getting your practice into the world. So I'm super excited to get to know you even better and spend some more time with all of you. Please hop on the forum with questions, concerns, curiosities, ahas, so that we can continue the conversation over there as always. And thanks for being such a great group. I really enjoyed our time together tonight.
Thanks, Jill.
Thank you, Jill.
Thank you.